The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning. My name is Bokshu. And as I was sitting earlier, I thought that the theme for my talk today is no snowflake feels responsible for the avalanche. I think it was Voltaire who said that. Everything we do matters. Every one of us matters. And I've been talking about the four vows, and in relation to the four vows, the precepts. So I think this is a way that we can really actualize Voltaire's stunning observation. So in my last talk, I noted that the way to save all sentient beings, which is our first of the four vows, is to put an end to our desires, which is the second of the four vows. It's funny how that works, isn't it? You were told the goal, and then you're told how to do it. But how do we put an end to our desires? That's the fun part. How do we make this operational aspect of saving all sentient beings operational? And we do want to be operational in this practice. We don't want to just sit on the cushion. We want to take the energy of this practice out into the world and make a difference in a world that is truly suffering, filled with tremendous suffering, day and night. And how do we make an impact on that suffering? So, if I desire to put an end to my desires, in order to realize my desire to save all sentient beings, how should I proceed? Well, the way in this house is to stop separating. To stop separating from ourselves and others. And the way to stop separating, so you can see it's just a bunch of nested boxes getting to the core of what this thing's about, and there's nothing there in that box. But you keep opening the boxes and putting them back in each other, and that's the joy of it. You never get to the bottom. So Dogen gives us the way to end all desires. He says in his Fukan Zazengi, sit upright, leaning neither to the left nor right. Neither forward nor backward. Sit stably in samadhi. Think of not thinking. How do you think of not thinking? Beyond thinking. This is the essential way of Zazen. So to save all sentient beings, we must do what we're doing here. That's why we're here. In this place, to save all sentient beings, we must sit Zazen. Because in our Zazen, we practice learning how to go beyond thinking. Let's just let this sink in for a second. So if we really want to save all sentient beings, if we're really serious about the four vows, we've got to meditate. But what's this beyond thinking that Dogen's pointing to as the key aspect of our meditation practice? I quoted some of these things in my last talk, but they are really important, so I'm going to go over them again. Yaoshan, who was Dogen and our ancestor, 450 years before Dogen, was asked by a monk, what do you think about as you sit in steadfast composure? Yaoshan said, I think non-thinking. The monk asked, "How do you think not thinking?" Yaoshan said, "Non-thinking." So there's an important, at least in this translation of it, an important distinction between not thinking and non-thinking. And as I said before in my last talk, we're not lobotomizing ourselves. We're not ceasing to be rational creatures capable of intelligent thought. But we're approaching the thoughts differently. The sixth patriarch, Huineng, gave Yaoshan and Dogen the blueprint for this non-thinking. He said, "Good friends, in this teaching of mine, from ancient times up to the present, all have set up no thought as the main doctrine, no form as the substance, and non-abiding as the basis. No form is to be separated from form, even when associated with form. No thought is not to think, even when involved in thought." So how do you not think while you're involved in thought? Maybe you remember in the Heart Sutra, there's a line, "No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind." Well, we've got all of those things, don't we? So what's it pointing to? No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. Those of us who are all endowed with eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. What's it telling us? "People of the world, separate yourselves from views. Do not activate thoughts. If there were no thinking, then no thought would have no place to exist. No is the no of what? Thought means thinking of what? No is the separation from the dualism that produces the passions. Thought means thinking of the original nature of true reality." This is certainly difficult not to crack, isn't it? To really penetrate what's being talked about here, not just to understand it intellectually, but to truly experience it. And there's only one way to do that, and that is in this room. What we do is give ourselves the time and space to truly experience that. And if we're lucky, after days and weeks, we might get a glimpse of it briefly. Then we'll start congratulating ourselves and it'll evaporate. And we start over. So maybe it would help us, as we try to contemplate this beyond thinking, to know what thought is and where they come from, where thoughts come from. In the Digha Nikaya, in the Pali Canon, the Buddha defines thoughts as elaborated perceptions and notions. So the key here, word here is elaborated. We have these confections that we manufacture around everything that we encounter, what we see with our eyes, what we hear with our ears, and so on. We're turning it into something else. We're not really experiencing this, for example. When you drink water, you can know if it's cold or hot yourself. But how do you actually experience it beyond the words? "Oh, it's too cold. Oh, it's too hot. Oh, it's just right." So where do we get our thoughts? These thoughts about just right, too cold, too hot. Maybe you think our thoughts come from our minds. And in a superficial way, that's correct. I say superficial because this statement assumes that our thoughts are actually the products of our own minds, that we are actually the source of our thoughts, and that we can actually control our thoughts. And if you've spent a little time around here, you know that we're really not in control of our thoughts. But we think somehow our thoughts come from us, that they are us. Well, we get our thoughts from someplace else. But before I get to that, let me talk to what the mind is. Kuei Feng Tsung Mi, a patriarch of two different schools 1,200 years ago, said this: "There is no need to arouse the mind to stop evil thoughts, nor any need to arouse the mind to cultivate the way. Since the way, as it is mind, we cannot cultivate mind with mind. Since evil is also mind, we cannot cut off mind with mind. Not trying to cut off evil or trying to cultivate good, just letting things follow their own courses and being ourselves, whatever that is, being ourselves is what they call liberation of mind. Nowhere is there either any Dharma principle that we ought to embrace, nor any Buddha that we ought to strive to obtain. Just like the empty sky that does not increase or decrease, what need could there be to augment or amend it? What need could there be to augment or amend the mind? Well, our minds do cause us pain, don't they? And they cause pain to others. And that's not really saving all sentient beings, is it? Or is it? How do we know? Listen to this poem by Lady Yoshiko. "As if mending socks, I repair my mind and live on." In our lineage, our teachers don't just talk about mind, but also the heart-mind. It sounds like Lady Yoshiko is very much talking about repairing her heart-mind. Our minds produce thoughts. The thoughts produce the pain of separation. And the pain of desire comes from that separation. And the pain of our world comes from those desires. We can repair our minds and our hearts here by sitting zazen. Repair does not mean fix. It means relating to our minds and to our hearts very differently. What is that difference that zazen makes in how we relate to our minds and hearts? Is there such a thing as a mind? Is there such a thing as a heart? In the Ceasing of Notions, an ancient text that was recently rediscovered, we read, "The master was silent and said nothing. Emun suddenly rose and asked, 'What is called the heart and how is the heart pacified?' The master replied, 'You should not assume a heart. Then there is no need to pacify it.' This is called pacifying the heart." So simple, right? Why can't we get it? If you shun what your heart mind considers to be delusion and chase after what it thinks of as enlightenment, you're wasting your time in this practice. The Ceasing of Notions says it this way: "Delusions arise because ordinary beings want to attain something. Within delusion arises at once division into same and not same. Without delusion, there is neither difference nor not difference." Just getting back more experientially to this question of where our thoughts come from, I'd like to bring up a story from a trip I took to Paris last fall. I was on a train going across town on my way to the Musée Rodin, and the train got stuck. So there we were, underground for about 15 minutes. It was very crowded and not well ventilated. So those of you who have been to Paris know that that's never a good thing in France, to not be well ventilated. So we were waiting, and we were waiting, and suddenly, out of nowhere, these two young voices started to chant something in unison in a kind of sing-song manner, and this is what they chanted. No homework, no grade. No grade, no college. No college, no money. No money, you're ugly. You're ugly, no husband. No husband, no children. No children, you're lonely. You're lonely, you're old. You're old, you're dead. And then they repeated it. And they repeated it. And they repeated it. And they were having an amazingly good time repeating this diabolical chant to a captive audience of people stuck underground. And it was just stunning. I was horrified. But there was nothing I could do. Maybe their parents were there, who knows, but they made no effort to intervene, and it just kept going on and on and on. And I had to ask myself, well, and they were quite young, I had to ask myself, well, where did these kids get this? Where did this come from? Well, obviously, this thought came from their minds, but their minds were doing nothing more than what a tape recorder does. Their minds were just playing back their culture. What they'd absorbed from their culture, either through the media, from their family, their friends, their schooling, they weren't originating any of this stuff. They were just reflecting it and having a good time doing it, I must say. When I was their age, I loved a cartoon called Rocky and Bullwinkle. For those of you who don't remember that cartoon, it was the adventures of a large moose and a small flying squirrel, and all of their various travails being tormented by Boris and Natasha. And recently I was thinking of this cartoon, and I decided to watch a little of it as a guilty pleasure. And what I saw surprised me. So in this cartoon, which was a retelling of Aesop's fable of the fox and the stork, the fox invites the stork to dinner. The stork is very scornful of the fox and continues to be very mean to the fox until the stork learns that the fox has a lot of money. This does not appear in the original version of this fable. There's never a mention of money. So then the stork gets very nice to the fox, but it doesn't work out for the stork because the fox can't eat. Finally, it gets back to the real fable, and the fox can't eat from the stork's tall vases, and the fox doesn't give the money to the stork. So the cartoon does give you the message that being a jerk doesn't pay off. But in 5 minutes, it's teaching kids how to be greedy, nasty, and insincere. And, this is not a speech against cartoons or bad TV or whatever, but we absorb that stuff. It doesn't just kind of bounce off children when they see that people behave this way toward each other, even if they're animated figures. So, this wasn't a violent cartoon, as most people would think of it as violent, but it was in fact extremely violent. And by the way, if any of you are ever annoyed by my behavior, inconceivable as that might be, then please just blame it on Bullwinkle. By the time we come to this practice, it's much too late to avoid the violence of our culture. We're steeped in it, swimming in it, suffering with it. But rather than trying to avoid our culture or to fix ourselves, a kind of sham enlightenment, we have the opportunity to develop a different relationship with who we are, really, and how other people are in relation to who we are, really. We can flow with circumstances. We can learn to skillfully interact with our own conditioning, our own environment. The other day I was preparing to bake a loaf of bread, whole wheat, multigrain, raisin bread, and as I was mixing the dough, my mind wandered. And I suddenly realized that I was having this fantasy about Kirstjen Nielsen, the Secretary of Homeland Security. And in this fantasy, I was telling Kirstjen Nielsen that I would have to divorce her because her policies were so cruel and inhumane. I'm bringing this up because I want to illustrate that we really need to look at our minds and be with our minds, whether we're on the cushion or off the cushion, and developing a relationship with our own insanity is really the point. So I'm just offering this because this fantasy was so wrong in so many ways. It just shows us our minds are vast, unknown frontiers. Can we learn to explore that frontier, to pan for gold in the shit of our minds? It's not fixing. Saving all sentient beings is not being perfect, is not exiling our so-called negativity, our greed, our anger, our ignorance. It's developing a relationship with those things and learning to skillfully work with them in relation to other people, in relation to circumstances, as they arise moment by moment. If you want to save all sentient beings, bear witness to the violence of this world. If you want to pacify your mind, or if you prefer to call it your heart, pay the most exacting attention to your deepest hurt. And as you look at the world, as you look at your heart, as you look at your mind, please remember that none of it actually exists. Or does it? I'll close with a poem by the renowned monk Ikkyu. And what is mind? And how is it recognized? It is clearly drawn in Sumi ink, the sound of breezes drifting through the pine. Thank you.